Welcome to the Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Jonathan Nicholas. Keeping us on track and out of trouble is our producer for the show, Tom McGowan. And now, on to the Property Beat.
All right. Good morning, everyone. We are glad you have joined us for yet another exciting episode of The Property Beat. Today, we are going to be talking about commercial real estate and kind of giving you a commercial update with our special guest. We oftentimes get listeners that call in and that are outside of the residential focus that we tend to cater to. And so we are reaching out to kind of satisfy you, our customer and our listener, by giving you some commercial updates. Once again, this is Cliff Perotti. I'm your co-host, joined by my co-host, Jonathan Nicholas. Good morning, Jonathan.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Yes, it is going to be interesting to hear another side of the business, if you will. Commercial. That'll be exciting for our listeners and also for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always fun because people often ask, you know, what's the correlation? Should I be investing in homes or should I be looking at small strip centers or apartment buildings or, you know, where are the opportunities? So I'm looking forward to hearing what Steve has to say. So, folks, we have got a special guest, Steve Maestas, who is the managing partner of NAI Maestas and Ward in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Oh, land of the cactus, and wow, and sun, and hot, and beautiful golf courses, and well, so anyway, he's going to give us lots of good excitement stuff. He's been involved with as a commercial broker for many, many years, and we're excited to have him, so he's going to give us the scoop on what's happening across the U.S. in terms of commercial real estate.
Well, let's not forget about Santa Fe, New Mexico. What a lovely area that is to get away and slow down the pace a little bit. So we want to encourage you to get involved here as a listener, to become part of our conversation here at the Property Beat. You don't have to just listen to us anymore. You can actually be an active participant. So why don't you just pick up the phone and call in?
It's more like if you dare.
Yeah. Yeah. If you dare, challenge yourself this morning. Yes.
Suffer and suck at ass.
Exactly.
You can call in to 347-989-0439. Again, that's 347-989-0439. You can also email us any comments or any questions that you might have. And if you're listening along and you have a question for our guest, do that. Just email us at questions@thepropertybeat.com or go to thepropertybeat.com's website, and you'll see a tab that says questions. You can submit a question to us there. If you see an advertisement for an upcoming show and you'd like to ask a question in advance, you can always do it there, and you can even record a question for a play on the show.
I like that feature. It's kind of fun. That way we get to hear who they are.
Right. Exactly right. Been a good addition to the show, and instead of us just pontificating and talking about things,
that's right. Then somebody else gets to do it. Well, you know, it's time for me to go get that cup of coffee before we get to our subject today. So we're going to have a couple of news stories, and we'll be bringing those right after this message.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and
once again for real estate news here at the Property Beat. Wow.
I had a chuckle.
Some mornings you just got it, and some you're just like trying to find it. Well, folks, those of you that listen to us regularly know that we like to bring a couple of news stories to you each week. And so, Jonathan, start us off.
Well, let's talk about my favorite subject, the government. No.
Oh, great.
I don't know if you caught the story, but it was interesting, and it kind of came and it went real quick. And, of course, I'm not a big news junkie anyway, as far as watching cable news and all of that. So, it, for all I know, it could be 24-hour coverage right now on CNN. I have no idea. But I don't know if you caught, talking about CNN, on CNN Money, the online magazine, Countrywide issued hundreds of VIP loans to buy influence is what the headline is. And did you, I don't know if you caught any of this, Cliff, but it was pretty interesting. There was a investigation that was started back in 2009 on Capitol Hill by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And it revealed that thousands of people had their influence had basically been bought by Countrywide through a program they called internally the VIP program or the Friends of Angelo. And Angelo Mozilla was the CEO and founder of Countrywide.
They're not like knocking on anybody's doors because I need to know what this guy wants. Hey, you, we're from the government. Oh, geez.
We're here to help.
Me and Angie, we go way back.
Exactly right. But what they found out was that there were literally thousands of people that included a number of congressmen, the White House staff.
Look, someone's got to give them a loan. Where else are they going to go? They don't have any reliable income.
Well, I'm sitting here going, wow, you talk about your subprime borrowers.
They can't even pass their own budget. What is that?
Absolutely. What budget? There's not one. There's not
exactly.
Been one for over 3 years in the Senate. But it's amazing that all of these loans were given out, and they had preferential treatment as far as, you know, lower origination, lower interest rates, and then the fact that if the interest rate would go down any time they had the loan, free refinancing, so absolutely no fees. So this was quite the loan product for the members of Congress and people that work in the government in order to get the influence there. So, you know, it's interesting.
Are they looking into this as a violation of RESPA?
You know, there's not any mention of that. I don't think it would be a violation. It's just the ethics, you know, portion of that, those people that took those loans in return for special favors that they might have given or, you know, that they might have given access to certain inside groups or legislation that was created as a result of the influence or what have you. So that's really what they're looking at.
Or borrowing of $700 billion. I mean, you know, little things like that.
Exactly right. So that's right. Now, no word yet on the default rate, what the percentage of defaults have been.
Oh, no, they won't default. They're all getting paid bonuses, so it's all working out well.
Exactly.
Well, I'm bringing something. You know, you have your favorite subject, which is the government, and you know mine. My favorite subject is Zillow. I love those guys. They're like the wicked kid that you could just beat in the corner, and they just keep coming back. So, you know, Zillow is expanding into, and I found this ironic, they're expanding their headquarters in Seattle into the old Washington Mutual headquarters.
Mm.
And we know how well that worked out for WAMU.
Exactly right.
So I'm wondering if that's – I mean, I'd be like feng shuiing and smudging and burning the sage and doing everything I could to cleanse that office out before I'd move my international headquarters into the old WAMU headquarters.
Absolutely. Maybe it was the name WAMU or WAMU.
WAMU.
WAMU. I have no idea.
Maybe there's something screwy around here.
Exactly. It also tells you, you know, that these guys are – they must be doing well, right?
Absolutely. How many square feet did it say?
It's about 22,000. It looks like so. It's like, man, that's a lot of square footage. So they're paying $36 a foot for 21,575 square feet on the 32nd floor. Wow,
that's a good price per square foot too up there. When you think of other areas,
they got a nice $800,000 design bonus by the developer.
So a little padding in that square footage price.
A little padding in that number, yeah, exactly. But that's a little bit of news from Seattle.
Well, as we're talking about rents, we want to just inform you that rents keep rising all across the United States. Rents are going up. Home prices are inching up, but rents are going up. And there was another article that was put out by Money Magazine talking about this, talking about the low, record low mortgage rates and how the home prices have been beaten down, and then how there's all of these buyers out there that can't get mortgages that are used to being homeowners in the past. And the number that was touted here in this article, over the 12 months that just ended June 30th,
mm-hmm.
average rents in the U.S. rose 5.4%. Now, it doesn't seem like a lot when you just take that number and set it out there by itself. But when you compare it to how much did home prices actually increase during the same period of time, home prices only came up 0.3.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Huge, huge difference between the two indicators out there. Rents up 5.4, home prices up 0.3, and they had some of the hardest hit rental price areas as far as...
Oh, please tell me this is some kind of practical joke!
It's true.
The largest increases. And where do you think the largest, steepest increase was seen this last year?
I'm going to guess California.
Well, yes, it is California, of course, and it's right in your backyard, San Francisco.
Yeah, we're seeing crazy stuff here.
Well, new renters are paying 14.7% more than they did a year ago.
Yeah, they had an interesting article in the Chronicle about 2 weeks ago, the San Francisco Chronicle, talking about this very phenomenon, and they followed a couple around trying to get into a rental.
Uh-huh.
And they were looking for like a three-bedroom house or a three-bedroom flat, and they were now looking as much as $4,000 to $4,500 a month.
Right.
And they'd walk into, like an owner would hold a unit open, and there'd be 20 people all there with their applications, their credit reports, and checks ready to go if the owner would simply lease to them. And so it's just crazy. It's really crazy here right now.
You're talking about a $600, $700 a month increase just in that type of housing that
mm-hmm.
you're talking about. That is crazy, that huge
it's
of a
crazy.
Jump.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It explains why foreigners are wanting to buy property here.
right, exactly. Exactly, the investment potential.
God.
Yeah. Not everywhere you can raise your rates that much.
That's true. So our last story I've got for you is something that happened this week that we've kind of known was coming, and that is that a lender named NationStar bought Aurora Loan Services, bought their portfolio of loans. And while oftentimes loans are resold or servicing contracts are resold, but the problem with this is that Aurora had one of the largest portfolios of loans in process of foreclosure. So what was happening was about 2 weeks ago, we got kind of the red flag when, you're working on these short sales with Aurora and suddenly they go, well, we're not really making any more decisions on these until after July 1, and we're going, well, why? We've been waiting 3 months. We're in the process. You've got all the paperwork. Well, because we've sold this particular loan to NationStar, and so they're going to have to now make the decision. So then when you reach out to on the first of the month, NationStar took over these billions of dollars of loans, and they are just overwhelmed. When you look at their website, they're saying, we're not even talking to anybody until after July 7th till we figure out exactly who's doing what, where, and it is causing, when you start looking at some of the blogs and the forums for short sale stuff, it could literally cause a huge hiccup in this process. So that, as we're starting to recover and get some traction on getting some short sales done out here, and suddenly you get a setback like this where you're set back potentially 3 to 4 months in a process, it becomes a real nightmare. So,
Well, obviously they weren't too big to fail.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned it because I think there's people out there that are our listeners that might have a loan in process or a short sale in process or foreclosure in process with Aurora that is now got a NationStar master and Taskmaster, and they're going to have to really deal with these people, and they need to be heads up and start looking forward.
Absolutely.
Be proactive.
Good advice. Yes, good advice.
So, folks, we'll be right back with some questions from our listeners right after this quick message.
Hi, Charlie. What you watching?
Ballet.
Oh, how is it?
Too soon to tell. So far, it's been nothing but dancing. But I'll watch it anyway to show Starkist my good taste.
But surely, Starkist don't want tunas with good taste. Starkist wants tunas that taste good.
Hey, that's for me.
Sorry, Charlie. Only good-tasting tuna get to be Starkist. Good-tasting 100% prime fillet.
This is good-tasting tuna.
Get Starkist tuna.
Note the name. Starkist.
You know, it's interesting. Now, welcome back to the Property Beat. I'm listening to that commercial going, oh, my God, I remember as a kid listening to that commercial. It's very funny.
You remember Starkist.
Yes, Starkist. Well, folks, it's time to listen to some of the questions from you, our listeners. So we have a question. Our first one is from Calvin in Amarillo, Texas.
Hey, I'm looking to buy my dream home. Should I wait till the market bottoms out, or should I jump right in and go for it?
Wait till the market bottoms out. He said he's wanting to buy his dream home, and should he wait till the market bottoms out, or just jump in there and go for it?
I don't know if it can get any darker down here. I think he's probably at the bottom.
Well, you know, there is a principle in real estate that we like, and that's called just get in. Just jump in and get in there.
Well, and how many times have we seen people that have tried to time their purchases, whether it's in residential or commercial, and they end up missing the market because they try to just overthink it instead of just get in, get control of the product, and be happy.
Right, exactly. And I don't think you can. I don't think there's a crystal ball that's that accurate. Just get in there. We know how far we've come. We're down there. If we're not at the bottom, we are really close to it. So you get into it. It's a long, you know, hold strategy. So jump into the market and get your dream home and take it off the market before someone else does and live in it and enjoy the benefits of home ownership.
You know, I also think that often you got to remember, this is a dream home. This is not about an investment. This is about buying your house. Mm-hmm. So whether you missed it by 1 or 2 months on the bottom of the curve or even a half a year, it doesn't really matter. You're in your home. You own it. Go get it, Calvin. And this question from Jeremy in Knoxville.
Hi, I'm a first-time investor, and I was just wanting to know, what is a decent rate of return on an investment rental home?
That's a good question. So what do you think? What's a decent return?
Well, I think you've got to look at how's your money performing elsewhere. Number one, I would look at that.
That's not fair. Anything is better than nothing.
So you have it all in money market accounts that are paying 0.89%, or do you have it invested in other things? And what is it going to be worth to you to have the risk and the risk about having rents paid on time or the risk of an eviction or risk of upkeeping repairs and all that? You got to think, what type of return do I want on my money? So is that 8%? Is that 15%? Or is that as high as 20%? And we mentioned, I think, couple of weeks ago on the show that the average rate of return for rental property, period, across, you know, single family, is around 5% or so. So I would gauge it based on that. Maybe you want to get 10.
You know, I think that, in fact, it's interesting. I wrote a little blog article out this week for foreign investors answering this very question, because they're getting teased with all sorts of, you know, buy in Memphis, Tennessee and get 18% on your money cash flow. And, you know, they just have never been to Memphis, so they really don't know what that experience is about versus, gosh, why would you want to buy in San Francisco and only get 3.5% on your money? You know, each geography has its own return rates, and believe me, folks, this is one of these things where risk is definitely commensurate with the returns. So if you see something that's offering you a 20-25% return over a short term, there's some risk there that you need to really investigate versus...
That's a very interesting question.
Versus a stable, nice 4-6% return, let's say, on a single family dwelling, very consistent, very reliable. So there you go.
Absolutely. Good advice.
Yep. Folks, we'll be right back with our guest, Steve Maestas, right after this commercial break.
J-E-L-L-O! Extra, extra, extra good news. The makers of Jell-O have discovered a way to give you rich, luscious chocolate pudding far more easily and far more economically than ever before. With the new Jell-O chocolate pudding powder, you can make old-fashioned pudding, smooth, creamy, and chocolatey, just like the ones grandmother used to make back in the good old days. Now you can have them again, and this is all you have to do. Just combine the contents of a package of Jell-O chocolate pudding with some milk in the top of your double boiler, letting it cook until it becomes smooth and thick. When the mixture has cooled, serve it in sherbet glasses. You'll have enough for 6 helpings, and that means 6 happy people. Jell-O chocolate pudding is so simple, so inexpensive, and so downright delicious that you mustn't delay trying it. Ask your grocer for Jell-O chocolate pudding, and if he hasn't put it in stock yet, be sure he orders it for you. Remember the name, Jell-O chocolate pudding.
Welcome back to The Property Bee, where this week our special guest is Steve Maestas. He's the managing partner at NAI Maestas & Ward, which is a commercial firm headquartered in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And by the way, we don't just get any commercial schmucks on this show. We got the guy that runs the largest real estate services firm in the state of New Mexico. So this is good. This guy's going to have some good stuff for us. There's not an expertise they don't cover, from retail, office, land, multifamily, industrial, business brokerage, property management. Good God, you do it all, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning.
Great. Wow, you must be a really busy guy.
I am busy, and now I'm hungry, listening to your vintage commercials on chocolate Jell-O and Starkist tuna.
You know, it's so funny. Well, next time we'll make sure we play the kennel ration. That'll get you off that kick. Now, as our listeners know, one of the things we like to do with our guests right off the bat is throw you under the bus and ask you to tell us something unusual about yourself, something, you know, maybe nobody but your closest friends know. You know, it doesn't have to be real estate related, just something to give us some insight as to who you are. So, Steve, what do you got for us?
Okay, let's see. About 6 years ago, I had the pleasure of having the then sitting United States president come to my home.
Ooh.
And it was quite an event. What was really interesting, regardless of what your politics are, was the Secret Service detail that was involved with the event. They lived actually in my home for a week prior to the president coming.
And wow.
I had snipers on my roof, dog bombs in my laundry room. I mean, it was really a unique event and an eye-opener in terms of all the things that are involved with a presidential visit. So that was kind of something that was a little bit interesting.
Now, was he there having dinner with you?
He had lunch.
And okay, so here's the question. What did you serve the president?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
All I had to do was just be there and smile, and someone took care of the food, and truth be told, we actually didn't get to eat. So.
Oh, no. That's funny. So basically you held your house so some bum could come in and eat.
Exactly.
With this detail of 50 people, dogs, snipers. Wow, that is a good – that's a first on the show. That's good. I like that. So, folks, we'd like to remind you that if you'd like to join in our conversation here, talking commercial real estate, then you can call in at 347-989-0439.
Well, Steve, tell us a little bit about Maestas & Ward and how it serves the needs of its clients. And maybe how did you start the company? I mean, what got you crazy idea that got in your head to get this company off the ground?
What were you thinking?
Well, I got started in the commercial real estate arena back in the late 80s, and I worked for a national company in Albuquerque. And then about 15, 16 years ago, my partner and I started our shop, Maestas & Ward. And we've just been very fortunate. We've grown throughout the years. We picked up the NAI affiliation about a year and a half ago. And you know, our big differentiator is simply our people. We've got great guys and gals that work real hard, and they're some of the brightest and best in our market. So we're having a lot of fun right now.
Well, it is all about people. So any particular specialty that your company just kind of naturally gravitates toward?
You know, we started as a retail shop, and we've got a real strong retail team. We've got a strong tenant rep division, a great restaurant division. And Albuquerque's got an affinity to retail, so that segment really keeps us busy. We do a lot of transactions and cover all of the different segments of the retail market throughout the state of New Mexico.
Well, I was seeing, you know, we mentioned Santa Fe earlier. You're going even up, if you're statewide like that, you're going up in that area, and you've got some properties up that area you're representing. So, now, what gets you, after 16 years, what gets you out of bed every day? Why do you want to come to work every day? What's your number one goal when you get up in the morning as a managing partner at a company?
That would be Starbucks, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's still fun. There's plenty of challenges. The world is a different place. It's very dynamic. We're experiencing a lot of growth. Talking about Santa Fe, we just opened an office there at the beginning of the year, and it's doing very well. So I think it's just that there's new and different, and, you know, those create certainly challenges, but they also create opportunities. So it's still fun.
Well, it is fun. You know, I'm thinking back, Cliff and I, we've been, almost 30 years, a little short of that in the business, and it feels like a new market, you know, from time to time as we go through these cycles, and it's interesting. So talking about those cycles, let's go back maybe 2 years, 24 months. What's happened as we look at this market? What's happened in the commercial market over those months?
Well, it's interesting. In the last couple of years across the country, we've seen a slow, patient improvement in most of the markets, most of the segments, but it really depends on the asset class and it depends on the geography. There's actually markets that are hot. There are segments that are on fire, and then there's some that are, frankly, ice cold. So overall, the fog's clearing a little bit. We're starting to get our footing. We have plenty of headwinds in certain areas. But the picture's a little bit more clear than it was 24 months ago. 24 months ago, I think there was plenty of panic in the market. Now there's still uncertainty. There is more optimism. We're not out of the woods yet, but, you know, we're starting to get our footing a little bit here.
And it's positive news, and certainly we need it. And for anybody that's listening to our show today thinking about investing in real estate, especially in the commercial market, there's going to be some good information here, so you want to stay tuned for sure.
And with that, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I'm enjoying that nut, mounds don't. I'm enjoying that real milk chocolate, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got deep dark chocolate and chewy coconut. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Peter Paul, I'm enjoying that nut. Peter Paul, mounds don't.
Because
sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
And speaking of nuts, here at the Property Beat, we've got a trio of them, Jonathan Nicholas, Cliff Perotti, and our special guest, Steve Maestas from Maestas. I guess it's NAI Maestas and Ward. I got to make sure I get that disclaimer in there. So, Steve, let's talk. You started to talk about some of the overall recovery, or what seems to be a little bit of traction, if you will, if that's a probably safer way of putting it, in the commercial market. What do you think is happening? Maybe if you could just drill down in some of the subspecialties, you know, how is office performing versus retail or multifamily or industrial? I mean, if you were looking at investing in one of these little sectors, what product would you perhaps be looking at right now?
Okay, well, I think you have to look at multifamily as the leader in each of the asset classes. Across
mm-hmm.
the country, it's performing the best. I mean, we're at sub 5% pretty much across the United States. The last last tally I saw, there's 70,000 units going to be put on the market in 2012. Almost 60 of the 65 major markets have improved in terms of rental growth and drop in vacancy. And there's interesting dynamics here. It's not just a supply and demand curve influence that's making apartments perform so well. You've got to remember, we've made some real cultural and generational changes in how we look at housing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was a kid, the American dream was to get a good job, you save some money, and then you buy a home, and if you're lucky, you trade up and buy another one. Well, today, the American dream is being on American Idol. I mean, our youth has a completely different viewpoint on housing. You've got certainly hundreds of thousands of people that have had major effect with the housing market, so they can't qualify for a home.
Mm-hmm.
Our geniuses in Washington aren't helping things. We've got slow job growth. So there's a lot of things changing in terms of how we look at residential, and what that's doing is that is really fueling a lot of the growth on the multifamily side.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly it is the top performer in each of the asset classes and almost exclusively across the country.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had a guest on, I want to say almost a year ago now, David Vivero with a company called Rent Juice, and he had a comment. He said, you know, this is, he called it the rise of the renter nation, where the generation that's coming in now doesn't really want to own. They'd rather just rent. It's no headaches to them. They can go and do their thing without any of the responsibilities of having that major asset that they're tied to. So it's interesting. You know, what you're talking about is hitting the actual numbers on the market, so that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's also an interesting aspect that in secondary and suburban markets, multifamily, renting an apartment is now a long-term strategy, whereas 20 years ago, it was a short-term strategy that almost had a little bit of a negative connotation to it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a real structural change in how we're looking at housing, and I think that's really going to help multifamily for many years to come. So certainly, multifamily is the top performer.
Okay. So what about geographically? You know, and when you look throughout the United States, what are the top two or three markets that you're hearing about or seeing out there where commercial real estate is really starting to take hold and give and move forward in a positive way?
Gateway markets, 24/7 cities. I mean, New York, D.C., L.A., San Fran, Houston. Those markets are really doing well. Housing is doing well, and a lot of it's tied to job growth. You know, it's a very simple correlation. You look at, for example, the top 20 job markets in the country. Five of them are in Texas.
Wow.
And
was that Jonathan coughing over that one or what?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
Texas, holy smokes.
and there's no surprise. I mean, you look at their regulatory environment, you look at their pro-growth, pro-job strategies, and it translates right into commercial real estate and into housing.
Interesting. So you've got so gateway cities are places to look, and you're seeing that multifamily is hot right now, it sounds like. And it sounds like even in spite of the fact that you've got all these units that are coming on the marketplace, it sounds like it's still a moving thing. What's another play that you see out there in the commercial market?
Well, I think a contrarian play is retail. Now, the herd mentality will follow multifamily.
Right.
But if you look at retail, it's a real interesting study. Certainly the consumer hasn't completely rebounded. Retail sales are okay. Year-over-year numbers aren't great. But in certain segments, it's doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Necessity-based businesses, even luxury, is doing well. The middle is challenged, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at necessity-based business like supermarkets, grocery-anchored centers, those are fundamental investments that, whether we've got job growth or don't have job growth, regardless of the economy, people are going to eat. So
if you
can get into a grocery-anchored center, it's a great long-term strategy. It's an inflation hedge. Those supermarkets are going to continue, at least the leaders are going to continue to do well. And there's not going to be a lot of that product out there. It's a scarcity component as it relates to trying to find that. It definitely is definitely tough to find. The other thing that's interesting are ground leases. If you look at what our treasury bills are trading at, you know, 1.5%, 1.6%,
mm-hmm.
where can you find a real solid, secure investment that will pay you as an annuity, will pay you as a bond? It's a ground
mm-hmm.
lease. We're actually seeing ground leases with major corporations trade at sub-4 caps now.
Well, can you, for our listeners that don't know what you mean when you say ground lease, explain what you're talking about.
A ground lease investment is an investment where a major, generally a publicly traded company, comes in and leases the land from the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
And the property owner then sells that income stream or sells that investment to a passive investor. Or, they can keep it, they can hold it. But the passive investor likes it because generally it's a long-term lease,
mm-hmm.
typically 10 to 20 years, and it's secured by a major corporation, and the corporation, in essence, has put a million-dollar deposit on the land because they've paid for the brick-and-mortar. They've paid for the investment of the
mm-hmm.
building.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very secure investment. And a lot of passive, a lot of long-term investors have been seeking that product type. They're also easier to get into from a financial standpoint. You know, these are usually $1 to $2 million investments.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that segment that's pretty hot.
Yeah,
we've got a question from a listener, Julia from Clayton, Missouri. She says that most of our portfolio is heavily invested in multifamily, and they're seeing a steady increase in the rental rates and return. However, we're not experiencing the same effect with the few office investments that they have. Any hope for a stronger office market is her question.
You know, I don't think so. I think office has,
let's slap Julia one more time. Okay.
it really, you know, okay, if you're in the Bay Area, D.C.,
oh,
sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's on fire.
Office has gone crazy here.
but if you look at it, we're using office space very differently. Mm. We've got a modicum of job growth, if that. So, and that's really what office space is going to be tied to. It's going to be tied to our economy and to job growth. But the way we use office space is very different. I mean, virtual offices, C-suite executive sharing, the need to reduce occupancy cost. Businesses aren't as aggressive in leasing office space today and probably won't be for some time until we get some clarity as to where our economy is going. So it's a real interesting dynamic where you don't have a lot of product coming on the market, but you also don't have a lot of demand. In fact, the fastest growing segment of business today are home-based businesses, and that has a major impact on office space.
Sure.
So, and the other thing that's happened is you still have plenty of companies out there that have leased space that downsized their labor force or their workforce, and now when they're growing over the next couple of years, they're just going to absorb the space that they mothballed. I mean, they're not going to go out and lease new space. They're just going to fill up the existing box that they've been using.
That's been sitting dormant. You know,
exactly.
Where they've had. I know too many law firms recently in our marketplaces where they had shaved space over the last couple of years, and now they're starting to absorb it back in again. And they closed it off, and it was literally just sitting there. So,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think
we'd like to remind our listeners, if you have a question you'd like to get in, just call us. Steve's ready to answer. You can simply call in at 347-989-0439. We'll be right back after this quick message.
Hot dog, Armor hot dog. What kinds of kids eat Armor hot dog?
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks. Soft kids, fizzy kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dog.
The dog kids love to bite. Picking it up on the old banjo, put on the mustard and away we go. When kids fight dogs, they yell,
hooray for hot dogs!
Armor hot
to buy.
Welcome back to the Property Beat, where we are talking commercial real estate with Steve Maestas, managing partner of NAI Maestas & Ward out of New Mexico. If you have a question or comment, call us by just dialing that phone, 347-989-0439. Well, you know, the words just couldn't come out at that moment. Oh, Lord.
That's okay. Well, Julia from Clayton, Missouri, she was chiming back in on the chat line, and she said, hey, St. Louis has got the arch, and we're a gateway city to the West, so we should be having better we should be having better returns on our investment. Sadly, not so, Julia. Doesn't qualify for a gateway city. So let's talk about opportunities. We've been talking about investments in the market and what sectors are doing well, what asset classes are performing, which ones are not. And as we look at the markets that are out there and our choices that we have, Steve, what areas suggest some caution before risking any capital?
Well, I think one of the biggest unknowns is the maturity defaults that are going to be coming up over the next 3 to 5 years. So there's a lot of debt that's going to be renewed because the loan is now due. It's been seasoned, and the values of those assets are not commensurate with the loan amount. They may not actually be in default today because the developer or the owner is able to make the payments because we have accommodative interest rates. But what's going to happen is when these loans start to come due, there's not going to be any equity in the asset. And so the developer is going to have to right-size that note. And there, what you're going to see is a lot of maturity default. What that's going to do is that's going to create almost a second market where there's this buying frenzy or this push down in valuation. So that's something that I think a lot of people that are in the know are very concerned about, and it's not apparent to the average investor. I mean, you just wouldn't know that you've got literally hundreds of billions of dollars maturing in assets over the next 3 to 5 years.
So you're really talking shadow. Yeah, like
yeah,
the shadow inventory.
Exactly right. That's exactly where I was going. The shadow inventory. Oh man, but nobody owns it except the original guy. But are you thinking that you're going to see suddenly a short sale? Do you think the lenders are going to be? I mean, generally, a commercial lender's got a little more savvy because there's so much money at risk here. Do you think they're going to be willing to look at short refis?
I think it depends on the lender. If it's a large national lender with a strong balance sheet, they have more flexibility than a small community bank.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be uniform. I think it's going to be very different based on asset class, based on the lender, and certainly based on the geography. So that's an interesting dynamic that's out there.
Yeah.
Will it cause another correction in the market? Is that what you're thinking? It'll have a price decrease, you know, they'll have to get it on the market at the right price, get it sold, almost like having a balloon note is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, what it's going to do, it's going to create opportunities for those that are positioned correctly and can capitalize on that, and it's
right,
going to create
right.
some real distress for the guys that are holding those assets that can't right-size that debt component. So that's going to create plenty of noise and ripples in the real estate community. Certain markets are going to have a lot of that. Other markets are going to have very little. Same with asset classes. So that's a real interesting study that I think is going to have some real interesting implications over the next 3 to 5 years. I also mm-hmm. think that the Bush era tax cuts, you know, and those burn off here at the end of the year. If we don't figure out how we're going to do something with that, if the guys in Washington don't get that figured out, that's going to have a major impact on retail and on the psychology of the consumer and the employer.
Cool. I could see that. I could really see that. It's interesting. You mentioned the maturity of these notes. The same thing is kind of going on right now in China. I was looking at that marketplace, and you've got a number of speculators that have been in the marketplace where the government now is putting pressure on trying to get rid of that speculation in the market. They're trying to make things more affordable for the average person in China as far as home ownership. And all these notes are coming due, and they had their first, I hate to say it on the show, but they had a suicide as a result of it because business people are under the pressure and under the gun, and they're having to go to loan sharks in order to refinance in the short term these notes. So it's affecting other areas of the world as well. So
the way you kind of rolled into that, I'm thinking suicide. Sure, that's what it was.
So there's our Asian update for the day. So as we look at other markets that are the antithesis of that, so we get out of the depressing stuff to the great stuff, where are we seeing the best returns? Now, we mentioned earlier we saw multifamily, and we also mentioned that, you know, not so much for office. How about industrial, any of these other areas that are getting good returns right now?
Well, industrial is interesting. It's been quietly improving over the last 7 quarters. The vacancy rate in industrial across the country has gone down. We're now at around 13.5%. We've got some major challenges with our industrial space in terms of, do we really need it? How do we use it? Is it different space today than what we had 15 years ago in terms of a need? And just technology has changed a lot of that. So industrial's improving. I don't think that the markets are good or bad based on a specific asset class. I think you really have to drill down into the asset class by geography. And, you know, what you got right now is very, very cheap debt. And so can you make a good deal in the industrial market or even in the office market? Sure, if you buy the asset correctly. One of the interesting and brightest opportunities out there, I think, is REO purchases, because there's still plenty of it. We just talked about maturity defaults with a lot of the loans that are coming due in the next couple of years. The opportunistic dollars that are chasing those type of assets and also note purchases really creates for some real interesting returns right now.
Well, Steve, we've got a question from David in Castle Rock, Colorado, who writes in, I have a 24-unit multifamily complex that I'm selling and want to 1031 exchange the equity into another investment. I've got my eye on a 30,000-square-foot office building. What should I be considering in my due diligence? Good question.
Well, I think you want to look at the asset from a physical standpoint and make sure that you understand what type of condition the property's in, and then you have to understand your local market. I mean, what are your rents? When are the leases expiring? Are the rents that you have on your existing rent roll below or above market? What's the vacancy rate in the market? You know, where does this asset perform? What's its competition? Just really understanding the asset in an intimate fashion and how it performs against the market is a key component. And I think one of the other strategies that David might want to consider is, what type of debt can you get that will be certainly beneficial on a long-term basis? And what I mean by that is, I think that we've got very good debt today, but what does that asset perform like at 50, we're going to call it 150 or 200 basis points higher than what he's at today? Because in 5 years, he'll be at a different interest rate than he will be today.
Yeah, and David, I would also encourage David, and this is part of, I'm sure, what you mean when you say really understand the property. Well, in fact, here's a question. You know, what would you recommend David does in terms of looking at the current tenants in that property? What kind of due diligence should an owner, potential owner, be doing around the tenant makeup in a building?
I think there's a couple of things. First, he needs to talk to every tenant. So once he gets
the
property under control, he needs to go and interview every tenant, understand what their business is. You know, are they selling products or services that are growing? Is their business model correct? Is their industry something that's shrinking, or is it vibrant? Just understanding on a common sense level what the tenants are doing in terms of their particular business. Then if they're public or even private, do some research online. You know, pull a DMB. If they're public, get a 10Q or a 10K.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at their rent to revenue relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a business is paying as a percentage, 10%, 12% occupancy cost, depending on the business type, that may be a key sign that they don't have a healthy business.
Mm-hmm.
When they should be at an industry average of, say, 6 or 8%. Again, it depends on the business type and the industry that they're in. But just really getting a clear understanding of what's happening with that business and talking to either the principal or the leader, the leadership in that particular location, I think is real important.
Well, there you go, Dave. So there's some good advice for you. So, Steve, are hedge funds coming into the market? Are they buying? Are they who are the big dollar investors right now? Are they foreign? Are they local? Are they private? Are they public? Who's buying the big buildings right now out there?
Certainly hedge funds are out there. Sovereign debt are chasing the big funds, the big deals. Vornado, for example, just bought a $700 million asset in New York. So we're seeing everything from REITs to sovereign debt to private equity acquire large trophy type assets. And they're doing it quietly, but they are definitely active within the markets, and they're focused on A locations. They're focused on the New York, San Francisco, L.A., the top tier markets.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you say that because we're seeing we even mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago that, you know, some really trophy properties out there that are hospitality-type properties, big hotels that are just very, very well known, are on the market, but nobody really talks about them. So, yeah, I get it. So, all right, now I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball and tell us, is there – we're hearing this horrible thing about this potential meltdown, bigger commercial meltdown than we've seen in the residential market. Is that coming, or are we going to manage some way to avoid that, or is that just all a bunch of hooey?
No, I think that there's a possibility of that occurring. I'm not sure that there's a high probability, but I think it goes right back to jobs. I think if you look at the job market and you watch that, that will be your indicator as to if commercial real estate is going to fall back down a couple of notches or if it will continue to recover at the modest pace that it's recovering at. It's really all tied to the economy and tied to our jobs. And I think a lot of that is going to be driven by where the country goes in the next 4 years. And, you know, obviously we have an election in November. I think a lot of smart money is sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what's going to happen there.
You know, and I think you also mentioned something that will impact this is the lenders and the monies that are coming due, you know, on these 10-year loans, 15, 20-year loans that are suddenly there's a little bit of debt coming due that's upside down on the properties. And I wonder if the lenders are going to be smarter, you know, having watched the residential side of things. And, you know, they've gotten smarter over the last 6 to 8 months even on how to handle these workouts and so forth. And I'm wondering if they're going to take those lessons and apply them to the commercial market instead of being so hard-nosed about them that they cause the market to collapse. Your thoughts?
I think it depends on the lender. I think certain lenders have the ability to be flexible. The smaller community banks are under incredible pressure and don't have that ability. You know, we forget very quickly, you know, and you look at new players in the market like credit unions. Reminds me back of the late 80s when the SNLs got into the market. Today they're very aggressive, they're very flexible. They're still working within the realm of traditional loan to value provisions and still making real sound decisions, but you know, give that a few years, and as the market heats up, you know, that might change a little bit. So it's a real interesting time. It's very dynamic. It's not all
right
in sync with the tide.
All right, folks, we'll be right back with Steve Maestas right after this quick commercial break. All right, welcome back to the Property Beat. We'd like to remind our listeners, if you have a quick question you want to try to get in before the end of the hour, it's 347-989-0439. So, Steve, give us some advice for the new commercial investor, you know, the person who's kind of just getting started, thinking, all right, I've owned a few houses and I see how that works. Now I want to try to get dabble, if you will, in some commercial product. What are the top three tips that you would give them, and what product would you recommend at this point?
Well, I think the first thing that they've got to get good advice. They need a good counselor. They need a good advisor. That's both on the legal side as well as on the deal side. So get a good commercial real estate broker that specializes in the asset class that they're interested in. Get a good real estate attorney that can advise them on the legal aspects of the transaction. So I think those are two very important team members to acquiring any commercial asset. I think there's three things. You know, back in the day, it used to be location, location, location. I think today you have to certainly look at location. I think you have to look at your debt on a long-term basis, because we're in an accommodative period here that won't last. And so if you're making your decisions on short-term debt, you're going to have a rude awakening in 5 years when that debt changes, because it will change in terms of the cost. And I think the third thing you have to look at is, what concept are you pursuing? In other words, are you going after an old model, you know, or are you looking at something that's got some legs to it and got a future to it? Healthcare, aging population, you know, 10,000 people retire every day. What are you doing in terms of senior housing or a healthcare product in terms of investment? Those are things that are going to continue to grow over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I think things that are value-oriented, they're not sexy, but dollar stores are a very, very strong component in the market today, and a small investor can get into a lease scenario with a dollar store. That's an interesting place to start.
Okay,
so
there you go.
Those would be a couple of thoughts I'd suggest.
Great. Well, we'd like to thank our listening audience for tuning in to today's Commercial Market Update with Steve Maestas. Steve, thank you for sharing your expertise and joining us today, and look forward to seeing you out in the market.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it, guys.
All right, Mr. Producer, take us out of here. Well, that's a wrap for our show today, folks. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Property Beat. We'd like to remind you that if you have any questions you'd like answered on our next show, you can simply email us at questions@thepropertybeat.com. You can also follow our blog at thepropertybeat.com, where you'll get news, tips, and stories about today's real estate industry. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with Jonathan Nicholas, saying so long. Thanks for tuning in.